All right. So on Friday, which was, of course, as you know, the day after Thanksgiving, I taught a day long at Spirit Rock on Zoom. So I wasn't at Spirit Rock. Unfortunately, I miss being there. It's quite beautiful for those of you that have been there. So I did a Zoom day long. I teach yoga also, so we did some movement, and it was a day long, and the topic was gratitude, which is very timely for the season. And I came away at the end of the day feeling like, oh my God, we could study and practice gratitude as a teaching and a practice, those two things, for more than just one day. It's actually quite deep. It's like all Dharma topics that they that the more you dive into it, the more it unfolds, the more you see all of the Dharma there. And Dharma is the teachings or the wisdom or the way things are. So the more we look deeply and inquire into something quite wholesome and beautiful like gratitude, the more there can be unfolded around that. So I'm going to talk tonight again. I don't think any of you were there on Friday, but I'm going to talk today on gratitude as a topic, because I find it so interesting and it's timely. Now, I have to say, just as a quick note, that there are three. I hear most often when I teach, I hear people say, "Oh, I should have more gratitude." And then equanimity and patience. Those are the three things that I hear most regularly, like the should, like the mental should. I should be different. I should be better around. And when I'm talking about gratitude, or when we start to, if you're interested in cultivating a gratitude practice, it's not about a should. It's not about this kind of like, you're going to just fake it. No, it's not like that. It's really an invitation to explore and cultivate gratitude in its authentic experience, authentic to you. So please, as I'm giving this talk, don't turn it into a should in your mind. Let's be curious though about it. Let's be curious and interested in it, at least for a little bit, and maybe for you longer if you choose to take it on. You might have heard, you might have done it. I know some of you have done this gratitude practice where you write down maybe in the evening something that you're grateful for every day. Or I know some people do gratitude practice where I did this for a while, text a friend every day, things you're grateful for, and you text to each other. And I'm going to be honest with you, I did that texting practice for some time, and I didn't feel like it was particularly, how to use the right word, it wasn't particularly useful, and it didn't actually help me feel grateful for things, which is a funny thing to say, but there it is. And just to point to this idea that we don't have to force it, that there are different techniques. So I'm going to talk about some different techniques. I know for some of you, this list method actually works really well, or I have a friend that did this texting, not with me, with another one of her friends, and she loved it. She felt like it changed her life. There's different ways to do all of these practices, and I'm going to mention a few different ways tonight, and maybe there'll be something that resonates with you, that catches your interest, that really supports you if you're interested even in the cultivation of gratitude. Science shows that gratitude is really good for us. You probably knew this. There's been a lot of positive psychology studies around this, that the benefits are mental, physical, emotional, that the potent practice, if we can find a gratitude practice that actually resonates with you so that there's an upwelling of gratitude, that it is a potent practice, that it's very powerful, and that it is as good as some pharmacological interventions. A gratitude practice is strongly and consistently associated with greater happiness, more positive emotions, improvements in health, helps us deal with adversity, and helps us build strong relationships. It reduces stress. It unshackles us from toxic emotions. Oh, it sounds amazing. Okay, but it is a practice. It's not this passive thing, right? A passive thing that's just going to come over you. I mean, sometimes it might, but it's also a practice. It's something that we can cultivate. You know, our minds actually have neuroplasticity. We have the capacity to change. The Buddha knew this. He told us that there is the possibility of the end of suffering, that we have dukkha, we have that which is difficult, and then there's the possibility of the end of suffering. So there is change that we can change. So we have neuroplasticity and we can do a gratitude practice. So way back in 2014, Forbes magazine said that the science is showing, back then even, oh, so what, 7 years ago, that gratitude opens doors to more relationships. Maybe you don't want more relationships, but it opens doors to more relationships. Yeah, think about it. If we can express our gratitude, our genuine, authentic, not false, because we can feel it when people aren't being honest with us. Our genuine, authentic gratitude, that it opens the doors to more relationships, or it helps our current relationships. It improves physical health. So again, this is from Forbes magazine. Improves physical health, improves psychological health, enhances empathy and reduces aggression. It improves sleep. It improves self-esteem. It increases mental strength to overcome trauma. So that said, we need to look for an effective gratitude practice. So I was listening this week to some of you on Mark Coleman's email list. I don't know, some of you might know him. He's a teacher, Vipassana teacher, and I'm on his email list, and he sent out this week a podcast from Huberman, Dr. Huberman, I think is his name, about the science around gratitude. This man is a scientist. He's at Stanford University, and he was talking about an effective gratitude practice. He was saying that the science is showing that the list method doesn't always work for people, and that we can harness the power of narrative, that we can harness the power of story to help us with the cultivation of gratitude, and that this can be actually quite effective. So I was thinking about this. I was thinking about, oh yeah, so the power of story, where there's some challenge and then we overcome that challenge, and that can lead to a felt sense of gratitude. So maybe it's a personal story for yourself, or maybe it's a story when a time when somebody expressed gratitude to you and you actually took it in, because we don't always take it in, but there maybe was a time when someone expressed gratitude to you and you took it in. You know, maybe 8 years ago, I went to Burma, to Myanmar, to study meditation. I hope I haven't told the story at this Sangha yet. I've only been with you twice, but I love this story. So I went to Burma to practice meditation at a monastery with Utejaniya. I went for a month. I was in Burma for 6 weeks, and I was at the monastery for a month. And I was doing meditation practice there. And it was really, the culture was a culture of gratitude. So the monks in the morning, very, very early in the morning, the monks would line up and go out in their bare feet. They would walk bare feet through. It's not paved. The monastery was surrounded by quite a poor area. And the monks would go out in the morning in their bare feet and with their bowls to get their food. I mean, actually, like, it's so interesting. The monastic tradition is set up so that the monastics can't touch money, and they don't store or prepare their own food. So every day the monastic has to go out and depend on the generosity of the community. I mean, what kind of gratitude would that bring, right? With having to depend on the community for your sustenance and your medicine and your clothing. So there's a culture of generosity. So the monks go out and they depend on the community, and the community depends on the monastics for the teachings, for their spiritual guidance and the teachings. So there's a kind of interrelatedness or codependence, which is actually one of the reasons why I think this is a really interesting topic in practice, because it's pointing to the fact that everything is arising arising together, depending on other things. And the Buddha set up the monastic system in such a way to really emphasize that the monks need food and medicine and shelter, and the lay people need teachings and practices, and they come together and they need each other and they depend on each other. So setting up a culture of gratitude and generosity from the start. So the monks would go out in the mornings, and the little children, there'd be little babies, and moms would be holding the baby, and the moms would put some rice or a scoop of food or something in the baby's hand and have and teach the baby to put the food into the bowl of the monk. Like, that's amazing. I was not taught that. I was taught to share. That's a common thing in kindergarten as a baby, to be taught to share things. But the children, this is such a culture of generosity, which I think is really beautiful. So I was at this monastery and it practicing, and my birthday was during this time. And, I was there on my own. My husband had come for a little bit with me, but he had already left at this point. So I was on my own, and I wanted to do something for my birthday. And there were maybe 200 or 250 people at the monastery, monks, nuns, and lay people, and the community, the Sangha, like we are a Sangha here. The community was there practicing and living together. And for my birthday, I decided I wanted to offer a meal. So I offered breakfast with cake, breakfast cake. And it was really actually very interesting to do in the middle of a meditation retreat, because suddenly the head nun was taking me on a shopping trip to go buy cake to offer to everybody, this kind of generosity. So I offered, and it's really in the United States, I don't know that I really have enough money to pay for 200, 250 people to have a nice big breakfast. Like, it was quite a thing, and I felt like I had this opportunity to do it. So I got to actually hand out the cake. So I gave everybody a slice of cake. It was really actually amazing. It was such an outpouring for me. And they had outside of the kitchen, outside of the dining hall, they had a big neon sign. It was like, it's tall, like 6 feet tall, you know, neon sign, flashing neon sign. And they wrote my name, you know, breakfast and provided by Ashley Sharp. And they misspelled my name. I was Ashley Shark, which was also really part of the story too. And I felt like this is a narrative, right? Like, this is a story, and I can like feel back into it and feel the happiness and gratitude from that generosity that was there. And that narrative of that story helps me go back and feel it, so that I can feel the gratitude for the whole situation, that I got to be in Myanmar offering cake to monks and nuns at like 7 a.m. or I can't even remember what time we ate breakfast. It might have been earlier than that, because we would get up at 3. But it was quite a thing. So a narrative to help you tune into that felt sense. So it's authentic. It's not faked. We don't have to fake this practice. That won't work. It won't work. We need to actually find the narrative that inspires you. This week I've talked to a bunch of people. A bunch of people got to get together with friends and family for Thanksgiving, and they hadn't. And I felt like that was a narrative too, that people were feeling really, really grateful for that. And I know maybe some of you didn't get to, or some of you don't like to, but I do know that there are quite a few people that got to gather this year for Thanksgiving. And because we weren't able to, the amount of gratitude, right? So there's the narrative. We couldn't have this, we couldn't be together, and now we can. And there's a lot of gratitude for that. So maybe I'll give you a little homework right now, even though it's not the end of the talk, of thinking about a narrative for you. It could be a personal narrative about a time someone offered you gratitude for something, or a narrative around something you're grateful for that you can come back to. Maybe there's a challenge that you overcame. you know, the narrative way of doing it, of cultivation of gratitude, actually does really work for me. My husband and I were able to buy a place to live in a small retreat center up outside of Fort Bragg, California, in Northern California, a couple years ago before the pandemic started. And we have such a narrative. I won't go into the narrative right now. It's rather long, but it's a narrative of challenge. He's an artist. I'm a yoga and Dharma teacher. We didn't have family money, and the circumstance, like, we can just, it's like a ritual almost that we go through the circumstance. How could we be so fortunate? How could we be so privileged for this to happen, that we get to live in this really beautiful place and have a place to offer Dharma and practices for people that want to come? Like, how? And so we'll go through the narrative of all the things that happened, or all the things that we can think of that happened that contributed to that. And that leads to this powerful sense of gratitude, which actually supports me. It supports me from going into that negative mind. Are you familiar with that negative mind? I don't have enough. Things aren't good enough, right? Like that kind of track. It helps me turn the tide from that, to think of the narrative. So I really invite you to think of a narrative tonight or this week that might support you, and you can return to it again and again. So this attitude of gratitude, I didn't even mean to rhyme. Okay, the attitude of gratitude, it's an outlook of contentedness and respect for all creation. So it's revolutionary, and it seats us smack in the middle of the web of life. It reminds us that everything is a gift. The air that we breathe, I feel like with the fires, this is something that we're all understanding, that there's great privilege to have fresh air, right? Fresh air or water with the drought this year and previous years, right? That I can be so grateful that there's water. There's a way where this mindset is turning me away from entitlement and privilege towards gratitude, towards seeing the great privilege it is to be alive. It's revolutionary. It seats us smack in the middle of the web of life. It's really, life is this great web of giving and receiving. You know, I like to grow a garden. So I have a garden, and I've been thinking about like all the things that go into a zucchini, right? Like there's so many things that go into a zucchini that I could eat. There's the soil, and there's the water, and there's the sunlight, and there's the air, and there's the seed, and then there's the timing, and then there's the pollinators. We had some trouble with the pollinators this year, so some of our zucchinis weren't getting pollinated, and they were all misshapen and not very good. So this practice of seeing like how much we're given is pointing us to the interrelatedness of everything, the co-arising of everything. Even like the zucchini, I have to have the pollinators and all those other things. And I also have to have the presence of mind to remember to go pick the zucchini before I get a baseball bat size zucchini so that it's still edible, right? All of the different things, right? This attitude of gratitude is reminding us, it's reminding us to come out of our narrative, our story of lack, and reminding us to come into a bigger story, a bigger connection, that we are all deeply connected and that everything depends on everything else, that everything is a gift. So we're recognizing abundance rather than scarcity. And it is an ethic of fullness rather than scarcity. And you know, our economic model is actually based on consumption, right? We need, our economic model needs us to feel like we're missing something, like we're empty, so that we consume more. And that's a powerful force in our life. We're trained. When I sit on meditation retreat, commercials come. Do commercials come into your mind too, randomly all the time from your childhood, right? Like we're trained. We're trained to want more, to not be content, to forget to be grateful. But really, appreciation begets abundance. Robin Wall Kimmerer, she wrote Braiding Sweetgrass. I actually really recommend this book, Braiding Sweetgrass. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. She's a scientist and a Native American, and it's called Braiding Sweetgrass. So she's braiding the threads of Western science and Native ways of knowing the world. She says, cultures of gratitude must also be cultures of reciprocity. Each person, human or no, is bound to every other in a reciprocal relationship. So this is pointing to the deep truth of emptiness, the deep truth that we are all arising in relationship to everything else. So our gratitude practice is not a passive response. It's a deliberate way of looking at life and looking at the stories we are telling ourselves. I was listening to something recently where, I don't know, I mean, I listen to so many things, so I can't tell you who was saying it, but I was listening to something and the prompt was to ask yourself, what story are you telling yourself? Because a lot of times we're running around having our day and there's a little bit of a narrative going on in the background that's not always so wholesome. And so just a moment of attention can bring that to the surface. Like this can happen with my husband. I'll be running a little bit of a story about how he, right? It's very grumpy, how he's always like this. And really, whenever there's a narrative going on in the background that someone or something is always like this or never, like whatever it is, that's actually a little bit of a mindfulness bell, like, uh-oh, because no one and nothing is ever always or never. Everything and everyone is always, we're always changing. So we can look and see what narrative are we running around with during the day. Is there something going that's not so wholesome or not so skillful? So the other thing I want to mention as a practice, so there's the kind of list practice where you're just writing in the evening, reflecting on things you're grateful for, or whenever, it doesn't have to be the evening, and seeing if you can feel it in a somatic way, a physical way. So it's not just an intellectual. That's one way to practice. There's finding a narrative. So finding a story that somehow inspires the gratitude. It could be a narrative about something you're grateful for. It could be a narrative, something in the world that is a gratitude story, or it could be a time you received gratitude from someone where you felt it. So this is another way to practice working with a story. I also like to work with what I'd like to call the and practice. And this really helps. This really helps when I am in a story and it's not so good, it's not so wholesome, and it's a kind of contractive story. And there's actually, whenever there's contraction, there's dukkha, there's dis-ease, there's suffering. So the and practice helps because, you know, the mind doesn't always want to let go of those negative stories. Are you familiar with that? It's like, oh, it's going to hold on pretty tight to those negative stories. So the and practice can soften that a little bit. What else? And. Because nothing is ever 100% positive, good, or 100% horrible, bad. Everything is mixed. So and practice. This is really hard. And. What else is here? And. Does that make sense as an and practice? So we can see the fullness, we're opening a little bit. So we don't have to let go if it's an unwholesome storyline that's contracted. We don't have to completely let go of it. We just add the and what else is here? And yeah, the and practice. And then I was reading this thing. This is a quote. I don't know who it's from. Oh, David Kane. I wrote it down. That's very good. He says, every event in a very real sense is both good and bad, including illness, breakup, hardship of almost any kind. Almost all of us can see how our failed relationships, for example, made us better in some way, even if they seemed like the end of the world at the time. So this is an article about radical gratitude. And I think the and practice is really helpful because we can sometimes ask ourselves, like if we're having a hard time, we can sort of ask ourselves to jump over where we are and get to gratitude. And we forget that piece of compassion when there's contraction, when there's suffering. And the and practice can help with that. So it's not denying the difficulty. It's looking around and seeing what else. And you can practice this. He recommends in this article, he recommends actually practicing with the small things, like you didn't get a parking spot where you wanted it. So it's really horrible, but actually maybe there's a little bit of a silver lining. So just the and practice, and we can practice with it, and we can know that sometimes it's not going to land. I don't want you to fake it or be inauthentic. We're looking actually for this felt sense, this authentic gratitude. And sometimes we have, it might be the wrong practice. Maybe if something's difficult and the and practice isn't even going well or working, whatever that means, working, but then maybe we need a little compassion. We need compassion for ourselves sometimes. But sometimes we can take the challenge. Sometimes it's easy. We could take it as a game, like, okay, radical gratitude, this thing that really seems on the surface not so awesome. And can we find a way to be grateful for something within it? So the and practice. All right. And then the other thing I want to talk about is how mindfulness can support us. And just this quality, you know, we just did meditation for half an hour where, it's maybe 35 minutes. We were practicing mindfulness, this quality of mindfulness is paying attention on purpose in the present moment without judgment. So this quality of kind attention, when this quality is present, when we're present, when there's something wholesome and we're present, it encourages it to come back again. Isn't that wonderful? I think it's wonderful because it means that we don't have to always work so hard. I gotta do the gratitude. Right? It doesn't have to be like that. If the gratitude is there, then we can be present for it. We can feel it. We can absorb it. It's like stop the presses and just feeling it for a moment. And it could be just like 2 seconds. Maybe you're in the middle of a conversation with someone. It doesn't have to be something noticeable or weird. I mean, it could be if you wanted, but just like, oh, okay, let it absorb like a little bit of presence. So the gratitude is like this, so we can feel it. And mindfulness can really support us with that. Some people find, with mindfulness practice, if there gets to be a lot of momentum with mindfulness, say you're on a meditation retreat, this is not always the case. We get what we get on meditation retreat, but sometimes when there's a lot of mindfulness, gratitude is there because we're present and we can see the beautiful sky because we're present, and we can see the sparkle in the child's eye because we're present. And we can actually touch into the fullness of life. Doesn't mean when we're practicing mindfulness and there's a lot of momentum, it doesn't mean that everything's always pleasant, but it does mean that there's presence. And that when those moments are there, that it's like opening a doorway. It's like stepping through the door out of our preoccupations into the magic and mystery that is this world, that is our life. So mindfulness is supported by gratitude is supported by mindfulness. Science has shown a lot of benefits. It is something that we can practice, that we don't have to fake it. We can be authentic with it, and we can give be patient with ourselves with it when we're not feeling it. And finds just the right practice, maybe a little compassion practice, maybe nature practice, maybe meditation practice. So we don't have to fake it. And that gratitude is something that we can actively cultivate, and that all of us have the capacity to cultivate. And that gratitude is pointing us to the way the world actually is, which is a beautiful unfolding of reciprocity, of everything arising due to everything else. So I'm going to finish with a poem from Hafez. Do you know Hafez? He's a Persian poet. Some of you know this one. Howie Cohen says this one all the time, and so I really like it too. It goes like this. Even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, "You owe me." Look what happens with a love like that. It lights the whole sky. So let's take a deep breath and close your eyes for a moment and just let that settle. Okay, you can bring your hands to touch again and take a small bow. Why not?